You know that feeling when your day finally slows down and you just want to relax, unplug, and feel good? That's where Mood.com comes in. They're changing the game, delivering legal THC products right to your door, no shady dealers, and absolutely no medical card required, just good vibes and better sleep, shipped straight from their farm to your couch. From delicious THC gummies, smooth vape pens, to premium THC flower, Mood has it all. And everything's federally legal under the 2018 Farm Bill. Yeah, this isn't some loophole. It's the real deal. Head to Mood.com and use code FIRST20 for 20% off your first order. That's MOOD.com. Find your mood.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. And we're back for part two of the discussion on the defense against the Colts in that first preseason game. Joining me again is Kadri Ishmael. Kadri, how you doing?
Hey, I am doing well, Ken. I appreciate you having me on.
All right. Always great to talk football with you, Q. And I enjoyed my time at camp with you whenever we get a chance to discuss something. And we're both seem to be at that age. We're trying to protect ourselves from the sun a little more. I wear a big safari hat. If you see me at camp, come say hi, by the way. Kadri, I've seen you more recently wearing a towel a lot of the time.
So that's my vanity, because when I wear my one particular sun hat golfing, what happens is that bucket hat gets all my sweat built up in it, and I have to wash it and all the things. But there are times where I will wash it or forget to wash it right away, and those oils build up across my forehead. And all of a sudden, I'm sitting there like mother of pearl. I got all these sweat bumps. And so, yes, there is the podcast world where you can be off camera. And then there's TV world where you can't fake it. And therefore, I just got to realize, hey, my TV face can't be looking all nuts. There's my vanity.
Okay. Well, that was a great explanation for that. I didn't really know. There's a lot of people with skin problems who are out in the sun regularly, and this is true among some of the people who cover the Ravens on a regular basis, on a beat basis. So I think being careful about the sun is just good advice in this day of UV. Let's get back to the 25 Ravens though, if we can. The emerging depth, I thought, at nose tackle was one of the real stories from this game. In fact, just this last week or so, about a week ago, they re-signed Brent Urban. And obviously, he does not address the nose tackle situation, which was part of the problem, because he addresses a position that I thought the Ravens were in decent shape at 5-tech. And he can also play 3 for you, a guy who plays with terrific leverage. but does not address that nose tackle situation. And the Ravens went into this game with John Jenkins, CJ Okoye, and Jason Jones, the rookie out of Auburn. So a couple undrafted guys, and John Jenkins has been in the league forever. And those three guys were outstanding against the Colts in this game.
I thought the speed in which they played, the Colts offensive line was definitely reeling. In other words, typically when you get, you know, D linemen in preseason games, it just, in my eye, it just looks like a bunch of rush hour traffic, really no clear lane, no clear way to see if a guy is dominating. But in this particular case, when you kind of look back at the game, you could see where the O-line just, they were having their difficulties. It was not about them having their way, but the opposite. It was like, oh boy, we got to figure this out. And I think that's something from a bigger picture standpoint. The defensive front, like, kudos, tip of the cap to them. I know that, it's not an easy situation to be in when you do see other veterans come in, but they showed themselves like, we ain't going to flinch just because you bring in Brent Urban.
I don't think they would normally. I guess my question coming out of this would be, great, I don't think you can look at this and not say that each of those guys really made significant contribution. John Jenkins, he's only in there for 8 snaps, but 6 of them were pass snaps, and he had 2 pressures and beat the right guard Goncalves, who is a guy who was, went to Pittsburgh, and he had a fairly high pedigree a couple of years ago when he came out. I got to think about, yeah, he was a rookie last year. I ask a question generally. Was this more about how poor the Colts offensive line was in terms of both quality of their players in general, but continuity, because they're not playing with, you know, Quentin Nelson, for example, in this game? Or was this a question of the Ravens were really as dominant as they looked with the three of those guys?
I mean, the glass half full, you're hoping that they're just being that dominant. And yeah, you, as a Colts coach, you're hoping that your guys would have competed better, even if you don't have your stud player in the game. You know, I think that's something that you take into account. But I thought also, even in the joint practice, you know, it was a situation where they were looking pretty good when it came to creating pressure, when they had their certain, you know, drills throughout the practice.
All right. All right. Well, I look at this game. Okoye, if we go after past Jenkins, had one of the great ragdollings of all time. The center kind of leaned into him, got just slightly over his feet, and all of a sudden Okoye just took him and ripped him like he was a little child and threw him into level 2, and then went after and delivered a big hit on the quarterback.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like it was impressive. Like I know that part of the emphasis is to put pressure up front. You know, if you go back and look at some of those games last year, in particular the Bills game in the playoffs, you didn't get off the field. You didn't get, you know, that rush and pressure to, you know, Josh Allen. The running game, there were some times where they had some big chunk runs as well. But if you can create pressure by your upfront guys and or tackle for losses when, you know, the coordinator calls some level of a run or some level of a screen and you're just disruptive up front, wow. Like that's when you're playing defense. That's when Zach Ward should be smiling, because now you've just opened up the world for yourself. And I'm hoping that this is not just an aberration, but this is the norm going forward.
Yeah, I agree. And I, what
I actually think the narrative on the defensive line has changed, because I think before this game, the Ravens would have asked the question, do we have enough depth among the guys we have in camp right now? And I think they answered it by saying, no, we don't. We're signing Brent Urban. And I think that's a pretty clear message that they're not really sure about their own depth when they make a signing like that. It's a little bit late. Maybe it was always in the cards that they were going to sign Brent Urban, but you know, it could also have been week two they signed him if they trust Brent to stay in shape. It's not like Brent will forget the Ravens playbook when he comes back. He's going to know it from playing here last year. But I, you know, then you have a game like this where all three nose tackles played well. And I think the question has actually changed to, how the hell do we keep all these guys? You know, we've got a lot of talent now on the defensive line. Okoye and, you know, maybe this is a place where you keep six defensive linemen when they also want to keep six outside linebackers, when they also want to keep seven cornerbacks, when they also want to keep five safeties. There's tough cuts coming, is my point, for having 25 defensive players on this team in terms of who they can keep.
Yeah, these are going to be some tough decisions and good problems to have. I think the one thing that, you know, the age of the new practice squad gives some flexibility to keep in some younger players. Because, yeah, I think, you know, obviously we saw what happened when, you know, Travis Jones was kind of nursing those injuries throughout last year, just didn't really help them much when they needed him to be at his best. And so I think bigger picture wise, yep, I agree with you. This is going to be one of those good problems to sit in on that final roster meeting. You know, a guy like a LaJonte Wester, you definitely are going to need. Well, Tez Walker is having, you know, one heck of a camp as well. And you know, doggone Tylan Wallace, you can't sit back and trip out on him either. So all of them, they're going to affect, you know, the linebackers when it comes to whether or not, you know, is it Ajabo who's going to be on the team or off the team? Like, is it who is the odd person in this? So whether it be Jenkins, Okoye, or Jones, like, somebody's going to have to help out Travis Jones, because he's going to be on the squad. But at the same time, you can't wear him out either.
Right. Yeah, I'm with you. They got John Jenkins because he's played a ton of snaps the last 2 years for the Raiders. In fact, he played the most snaps he had his whole career. I think I want better, not more, in terms of what you got. But that said, I'm incredibly impressed with what Jenkins showed on Thursday night. He looked like a player that I didn't recognize, you know, steamrolling, walking his guy right back into the quarterback twice in a six pass rush sequence there.
Let's see what it looks like again. So this is the cliche element of my words, but if you know, your audience is a smart audience and has a high football IQ, stack the day then. Stack the day. Stack the week. So let's see what they do against the Cowboys.
All right. You know, we talked about the depth at outside linebacker to some degree in the first part, because we got into some of the guys, even like not just the top six who may be competing and there's one less chair than there are players, but also they've got with Kamen Rucker and with Malik Ham, even they have potential practice squad additions. You've really got to look at that now. And I think the Ravens will to start the season as part of the roster, but they also need to be careful that when they, you know, they've just had a guy who's played as well as he has, like Okoye or like Jason Jones, that the chance is not zero now that those guys will be claimed off waivers before they get to the practice squad. And then even when they get there, they're not safe on a week-to-week basis, because every injury that comes up, one of the first places opposing general managers will look is the Baltimore practice squad for, you know, quality depth players.
Yeah, that's it. I think it's funny in a good way that teams, they source out their scouting. They draft who they draft. They acquire who they acquire. Their coaches go through their camps. But there is a known around the league that the Ravens, who do their own in-house work, they have a coaching staff that is challenging and runs a very tight ship. So when, yes, you do get a player from Baltimore, it is known offensively and defensively that you are getting a guy that's going to be seasoned and ready to go. And that's something that it's a blessing and a curse, if you will, if you're trying to, quote unquote, stash players away.
Yeah, big time. And I'd go maybe a step further here is that it doesn't help. I mean, it does help the Ravens to basically have their coaches being promoted out of the jobs. It's a very positive culture to be able to hire in quality people because they know this is an organization where you can excel and get hired out into a larger role. That's good management in any business. But the fact that they've been so successful doing that, and they've got Harbaugh in San Diego, and they've got McDonald in and Harbaugh and a bunch of his former Ravens coaches in San Diego, Greg Roman, for example. They've got McDonald in Seattle, and they've got Hugh Douglas out of the scouting department running the Jets. And they've got, Pittsburgh now is acquiring Baltimore players at a prodigious rate with Elliott and Queen and Harrison. And there's so many Baltimore East, West, North, and South management departments out there or coaching staffs that you're going to have extra reason why you'll lose those players.
It's the Baltimore tree. It's how you do business. And I think ownership, whoever they are and however they, look at their business model, they're probably saying to themselves, man, maybe we should change it up. But I think, for the Ravens, going way back to Ozzie and the early portions of this franchise's 30-year history, well, what do we need to do to make sure we are all on the same page? And how can we acquire guys and develop them the right way? Again, one of the things that I think is so critically important, it's the little things that you want to put forth so there's no distraction. So you can get the guy that gets into his playbook. So you can have him be the best version of himself. So let's eliminate all the distractions so he can go out there and play his best.
All right. I want to talk a little bit about the tackling in this game, because this is a game where the Colts missed a fair number of tackles, particularly in the Ravens' run game, also on special teams. The Colts missed a number of tackles. The Ravens, if you use the PFF method, and they're fairly harsh on tackles. All I ask, by the way, in terms of missed tackles, if you want to quote them to me, use a uniform source, something where I can check from one period to the next. I don't want PFF tackles compared to some other group that isn't really harsh on missed tackles, or that is incredibly harsh on missed tackles. The standards are what they are. But anyway, the Ravens missed only 2 out of 66 tackles in this game, a 3% missed tackle rate, which is just ridiculously good. Whether that's it'd be impossibly good for a season. There's almost no player who would turn that in, but it's fantastic for a single year. The league average missed tackle rate is something about 13 or 14%, right in that range. So it gives you an idea of just what a good game this was, and very great, fundamentally sound football they played.
Yeah, I think as I'm trying to look back on it, I think it was Jalen Armour Davis. It was a scramble, and quarterback got the ball out of his hands. I forget who the receiver was, but made his guy miss. It might have been TJ Tampa's guy, and Jalen Armour Davis tried to go for I guess the kill shot, and that was the only really truly missed tackle that was like an ugly one that I saw. But yeah, you're right. I think the way they swarmed to the football, I think the way they just played overall was a strong testament to, again, the way their camp has been going, the way John Harbaugh prepares his squad. You say play like a Raven, and everybody thinks that that's just some cute little thing, but nope, it isn't. And part of your toughness is working on your fundamentals each and every practice, and that's exactly what they did. They were working on their fundamentals throughout their early portions of their individual drills with their defenders, and it has shown up in the game.
All right. Well, let's move on and talk about some individual players here. And Q, you're the guest. Why don't you pick any player, any position you'd like to talk about, and then I'll pick the next one.
Yeah, you know, I think right off the bat was Mike Green. When I looked at his play, it just was fantastic. I loved how he was on both sides of the line of scrimmage. It didn't matter if it was a tight end or just the tackle that was out there. I equated him on my podcast to Elvis Dumervil because of his bendy nature and his speed off the edge of what I've seen in camp. But then to see it in the game, like his variations of movement, I think they robbed him of a sack, because, or at least a half a sack, because he was able to get to
an Isaac sack.
Yes, a decent Isaac sack, and he played well on that play. But shoot, the stepping up and trying to get out the way was due to Mike Green getting there first. His hand was on the leg of the quarterback, and so that to me was like, okay. And I thought he played well in the run as well. So it wasn't just he was one trick ponying it. He was, you know, he set the edge and did a good job of really scraping down and making sure the ball carrier was not getting any extra yards after contact. So that would be my guy that right now I would say starting off this conversation.
So real quick on Green, I'll just respond to that. I thought he had tremendous power in this game, and that was one of the questions about his game. Is he just a guy who's so slick in terms of his movements that he can get around you? We saw that. And I thought he was remarkable in terms of the motor, but also the ability to do things from the ground. I mean, he was behind the quarterback. He basically crawled up, grabbed the quarterback by the foot, Daniel Jones, for a second, which distracted him enough that it ended up being, I think he might have actually still completed the pass, but it was still a pressure. You know, he's got the quarterback by the foot. The quarterback can't throw the ball effectively if that's the case, until he got out of it. I thought, you know, he had a wonderful play on the right sideline, blocking Warren. Now, Warren is a player that he should be able to handle, you know, given who he is and his relative understanding and quality of the leverage he's going to get against Warren. But he stuffed him right back to turn that run inside, and Okoye cleaned it up. And Okoye gets the tackle, Okoye gets the credit, but Mike Green really made that play. I thought we saw, you know, just terrific bendiness and his slipperiness we are just going to love in terms of his ability to get around people. Secondary moves, coming out the wazoo, times him up very well. He's a player that's going to be a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
All right, let me move on. I'll talk about Adisa Isaac. We'll stay at the outside linebacker position because I thought he exceeded my expectations significantly. I thought that the Ravens would have they might not even really care by the end of camp who would be their number five guy at outside linebacker, because neither of them would be all that exciting. We've got two guys who are both exciting as of right now, and Adisa Isaac, I thought, played very well in the game. He had multiple pressures. He had an easy time with Freeland, the left tackle, on multiple occasions. And I had him on the game for four pressure events that he contributed to. And those are within 3 seconds, by the way. I differ from PFF in that regard. Can't get a late pressure where you're chasing the quarterback. Even though that has value, it doesn't count as a pressure for me unless you get it within 3 seconds. And then he also was part of three drive-ending plays, which that is a big statistic, because those are the high leverage plays. You can get your team off the field. That's a big deal for any defender. And we had multiple guys who were involved in two, three, or even four drive ending plays in this game. But Adisa Isaac was one of them. I thought he probably outplayed Ajabo in the game. That's how I would see it. How would you feel about it?
You know, Adisa Isaac, again, some of the things that you're mentioning, it is sparking my brain to light up and say, you're right. There were some really good leverage moments of attack that I thought we just couldn't get a chance to see last year because he was injured. So it was good that whether it be the run or the pass, he was involved, but didn't look lost, didn't look like he was playing tentative. Yes, I think from an outplaying of Ajabo. It was him outplaying, although Ajabo did get the splash play that everybody's going to be talking about with the sack on Anthony Richardson. But I appreciated the way he played, and I'm actually anxious to see how Adisa continues to grow. I had a chance to meet his family at camp, and you know, his dad has a strong football background as a coach, and his brothers, they young dudes up and coming as well. So you know, football is in his blood. I think you know, it was good to see him out there. And again, durability wise, you know, he didn't seem like he broke down. So that's a positive when it comes to Adisa Isaac.
There you go. Who's another player you'd like to talk about?
You know, I thought Jalen Armour Davis, I thought he, from a bigger picture standpoint, with, I know it gets a little bit tricky when, you know, everybody is excited about Jair Alexander, Wuzie, obviously Marlon Humphrey, and you know, the jack of all trades, and Kyle Hamilton, and rightly so. Like, I don't want any of them to come off the field. I'm hoping Malachi Starks does not come off the field, and they, you know, live long and prosper. Come on now. But you do need that necessary depth and understanding. I thought that you know, there was just a sense of urgency to his game. I would have loved to have seen him, the one pass defense, I would love to have seen him pick it off. I think both of his hands got on the football, but alas, he did not. And it's not that it's a bad thing. It's just, it is what it is thing. And bigger picture, man, I appreciated his game.
I broke it down in the article into six things that I really had not seen regularly for JAD that I did in this game. And I think it's a big deal. First of all, he was healthy and he played in the game. JAD's missed a ton of football in his career. And he's missed, in particular, a ton of preseason football, which has really hampered his development, because that's your live fire you get to face a lot of times early in your career. Missed a ton of – didn't play very many games at Alabama when he was there. So his total amount of playing time is very limited. So he's healthy, he played in it. Then they showed the demonstrated versatility between playing on the outside and a slot corner. That's going to pay a lot of dividends. The Ravens do not have an obvious backup at slot corner so far determined. It could be a Keon Martin. It could be, you know, it could have been Ardarius Washington. It could still be, I suppose, Robert Longerbeam, who I think is a legitimate inside-outside candidate, but he just hasn't been healthy for important live fire now, the first two of these five opportunities they get this August. But I thought that Armour Davis did himself a huge favor by being able to play both positions. The third thing is he returned to the field for an extended trial. Now, this was after Kone got hurt. You know, some guys, they run into the locker room. In fact, some guys really get themselves in trouble with a team because they start getting undressed and into their street clothes when their time is over. But Kone was hurt fairly quickly. Armour Davis came out. I think the plan was that he was out of the game, but then he came back in and he played, it might have been three or four more series after that into the second half, or maybe to the end of the first half. Let me look at my sheet here for a second. So, no, he played into the third quarter. So with Tampa, and those guys, they had to pick up additional reps because other people were hurting. It's nice that he was mentally prepared and physically prepared to do that. So that was number three. Number four, he found the football in the air. That's something JAD's never been able to do before. And it shows up in practice all the time, particularly in 24. I haven't looked for it as much in 25, but it's been his Achilles heel as a cornerback, is he can't find the football in the air. Got all the speed you could need at the position, but it just cannot peak and track the way you need to when he's essentially in phase with that wide receiver. So I was very happy that he was able to show that. He made plays on the ball, so it came from behind a lot of times, you know, reached around the receiver appropriately to get to the football. I thought that was very impressive. And then if you just look at the results, I mean, he was thrown out six times for 23 yards. This is 3.8 yards per target, which is obviously outstanding. But these are against QBs that aren't
Your typical preseason QBs. He played against two guys who have an extensive NFL starting experience. In fact, the Colts were favored in this game because of exactly that, about the quarterback competition that the Indianapolis Colts have right now meant more quality quarterback snaps that they were going to get off in this game. So I thought all of that really was a package that Armour Davis put together that made him the single Raven, I thought, who improved his position the most of any on the team in terms of his likelihood of impacting the 25 team.
Very powerful. I think let's see what you do off of that performance. Let's see that you stay locked in when you travel down to Dallas. Let's see and make sure that from a bigger picture standpoint, you do the necessary work to keep your body fit and ready for the next challenges, because the receivers at Dallas are going to pose a different threat than what we saw. The quarterback play is going to be a different, level of quarterback play than what we saw against the Colts. So those are things that, again, the stack days comment still remains, but kudos to him is what I would say.
All right. Fair enough. I'm going to pick another player here and go with Aeneas Peebles. I thought his day was probably a little bit overshadowed by others who had more splash plays, but he had a great motor in this game. And we know two things about Aeneas Peebles coming in and really coming out of the draft. Number one is that pretty much every knows that he's short. Okay. And the other thing that people seem to know is that
you ever have one of those days where everything's off? Well, Mood can help with that. And let me tell you about Mood. It's the online cannabis brand that is changing the way we handle everything from stress to sleepless nights with functional gummies that are 100% federally legal cannabis. Mood launched to make cannabis affordable, accessible, and transparent, while at the same time supporting American farmers growing premium hemp on small pesticide-free farms. Their gummies are next level. Seriously, I've tried a few and each one feels totally different. The Sleepy Time gummies, out like a light, immediately asleep. The Epic Euphoria, it's perfect when you just need a reset to feel good again. What makes them unique? Mood combines THC with herbs and adaptogens, so you get real targeted effects. You're not going to find this in your typical dispensary. And here's the best part. Mood ships discreetly to most states, offers a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, and right now you get 20% off your first order with the promo code RAVEN. Just head to mood.com. Find your perfect gummy and use the code RAVENS at checkout to save 20%.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Save big money right now at Menards. From smoke and carbon monoxide detectors to fire extinguishers and more, Kidde Home Safety products keep your family protected in case of emergencies. Smoke and carbon monoxide detectors are perfect for your living spaces, offering protection and peace of mind. Save big money on all Kidde products at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. He's really got a big bag of pass rush tricks that he brings to the National Football League, which is very unusual for an interior defensive lineman these days. Most of them, they really have to learn how to rush the passer once they get here. They get by on their physicality and whatnot. Peebles really looked the part on Thursday night. He delivered that drive-ending PD on Riley Leonard's pass. That was the kind of play, by the way, that him being so short
Yeah.
Riley Leonard may have taken him for granted. You know, if you've got two players on the field, one of them's Brent Urban and one of them's Aeneas Peebles, and they weren't, that, as far as I know, on the field together at some point in this game, but you might really want to throw the ball over Aeneas Peebles. But Peebles is aware of that too. He knows how to disengage, take a half step back, leap up, and impact the football. So he made that play. He chased Jones mostly around the pocket. He had three tackles. Now, none of them were defensive wins, which means none of them like beat the down and distance improvement relative to the sticks, but they were still some short yardage tackles. And I think that the fact that he was tackling effectively, didn't miss tackles, is also something he overcame in this game. So rotated throughout for 42 snaps, so heavy workload. Just he was one of the other Ravens, I thought, who showed me the most in this game in terms of the improvement of my the increase in what I can expect for him in the 25 season.
You know, it's so funny when you talk about Aeneas Peebles. Like, I guess I when I'm out at camp, I'm always so outside guys, and like I get so caught up in, you know, Ajabo and what he is or isn't going to do, or I got my little fanboy crush on, you know, Mike Green, and you're absolutely right. Aeneas Peebles and CJ Ravenel, like both of those guys,
yeah,
you know, they did their job. They did it effectively. They were able to, you know, technique wise, they just didn't flinch. And what I mean by flinching is like, so there's like, you know, your assignment, but there's also that robotic kind of, okay, I need to do this stunt. My job calls for me to occupy the guard because I know my guy is going to come off of me and get loop around me. And so neither one of them looked like that. They both looked really super fast and super confident in their assignments. I think that's something that really stood out to me. So I love your analysis of what you saw from Aeneas Peebles.
All right, who's your next guy?
Yeah, so I think bigger picture, Ravenel was the one that in my mind was, ooh, what are we doing here? Like, okay, what is he listed at? You know, three bills. He's a big boy in terms of his height and everything, and he can take up some space. And I think the Travis Jones, hey, how we're going to, you know, keep him, you know, healthy through 17 weeks. And I think that comes from, you know, play like Ravenel can play. And I'm hoping that what we saw from him will continue. I thought he was able to push the pocket back. I thought that he created leverage at different points. I thought there were some different pressures as well. I don't know. I really appreciated watching him, and then at the same time recognizing schematically some of the details of occupying two guys while freeing up others.
He's a good space denier in the run game. He has that ability. He has some ability to pursue as well. I loved him as a pass rusher. And by the way, he didn't get a bunch of cheap pressures late in the game. He did get his quarterback hit in the fourth quarter, but he got a pressure in each of the first two quarters as well. So he's playing against the better players that the Colts had to offer as well and still doing well. He had four tackles. Actually, there's three tackles or four tackles in the game. Whether it was three tackles or four tackles, every one of them was a defensive win. And that's always a big deal to me in terms of getting that done. Looks like he's grown into his body a little bit better this year. He weighs about 8 pounds more. He's at least listed about 8 pounds more. And I don't have that ability to necessarily look directly at a guy and tell if he's put on 5 pounds or put on 8 pounds or whatever. It just doesn't show up on me on a 250-pound or 300-pound man the way it might with others. I can tell Travis Jones doesn't look like a normal human, you know, in terms of what he makes the body. Really, really impressed with Ravenel's performance in this game.
Yeah, it's about playing fast. And you say about size and this is where you could just see the badass athleticism of these very large men with pads. Like, they just go out there and they don't flinch. And they look the part. He looked the part. And the fact that, you know, I love the point that you made where you're, you know, recognizing he's going up against some of the, you know, the opposing team, this particular case, the Colts, some of their upper, you know, tier guys, not necessarily just sitting back and, well, you got some, you know, second level guys that are going to be working at, you know, Home Depot in a few weeks. So that to me, that's why I was like, wow, okay, you're now on my radar. You're now going to make me watch interiorly more than what I did previously.
All right. I think it's my turn because you had Ravenel, right? So
yeah.
You know who I liked who played well, who I think went underappreciated in this game is Keon Martin. He played a lot of slot corner in this game. He was the guy who really finished the game there, entered on the final drive of the first quarter, and he didn't give up plays. And I did happen to look right before the show. I looked at the PFF stuff for him, and it looks like they've misascribed a reception to him. And I've got to do this, but Keon Martin is charged with the 25-yard play, which was the one on the left sideline where I thought it was JAD and Bo Braid ran into each other in coverage.
Yeah, that play? Yep, absolutely. That was both of those guys. Braid actually made the tackle.
Yep.
But Jalen ran into him, and you know, yes.
So I think PFF may have that misascribed. I'm gonna send a note along and see if they'll get that changed. But I had him for only giving up 1 5-yard completion. He knocked down a pass for Owen in the third quarter. This is a big one. The play where a whole bunch of things happened, but Buchanan got rubbed off the play by Ogletree crossing in one of those mesh concepts. And Ogletree basically knew he'd rubbed off Buchanan appropriately. And then he got greedy and he saw Keon Martin to the left of him and he blocks him and it turns into an offensive pass interference. And I thought that's, first of all, great for Keon to pick that up. It wasn't anything that he tried to do, but he was in the right place at the right time to happen to pick that up. But it's actually a really funny thing to watch that happen to Ogletree because he's just made a great play and he turned it into a terrible play.
It is football intelligence all the time. And yeah, good for him that is only the preseason and not necessarily the regular season.
There might not be a regular season for him. You know,
true. That is very true. Very true.
All right. So another player.
You know, I think looking at it, I would say, do we talk Trenton Simpson? Do we even say that, you know, make a big deal of the fact that he didn't get the green dot? Do we, you know, sit back and you know, assignment-wise, did he occupy the tackle well when David Ojabo comes off the edge? Is that something that, you know, the coaches are going to look at? Obviously, you know, he in coverage, there was a wheel route where because of the pressure, that his player wasn't necessarily looked at, but leverage wise, I'm like, yeah. Regular season, they're probably going to scheme that play against you, bro. So there's, I don't know. I'm curious your thoughts on Trenton Simpson.
Okay, so I don't think Trenton hurt his chances in this game. And I look at the green dot as being the Ravens have a limited number of opportunities to give it to somebody else and see how it works out. Giving it to Buchanan makes a lot of sense to me because I think he's the backup mic on this team. And since the mic is there on every down, regardless of package, it kind of makes sense that Buchanan would be the green dot holder if anything were to happen to Roquan. So there may not be a version of the world where Trenton Simpson gets the green dot during the regular season. So why give it to him in the preseason? Just give it to the guy who's the backup mic. I don't have a problem with that. I also wouldn't have had a problem if they gave the green dot to Reuben Lowry in the second half. I didn't know who they did give it to, but he played every snap and would have been a perfectly reasonable choice if they trust him to communicate the defense properly. And that'd be a, oh boy, would that be a developmental feather in his cap? You remember back to when Chuck Clark took over the green dot, when there was a whole bunch of people fumbling the green dot away in that 2019 season.
Yep. That makes sense. Perfect sense.
Okay. So you came, I get another player here. Let's talk about Marquise Robinson. Now, not a guy who was a high profile guy in this game, but I thought he played well. 34 snaps of outside corner. One of the things was, if you look at where the passes went, the Colts went after TJ Tampa deep the whole game. Mm-hmm. It is a concern. It's a concern about the speed. He didn't show up poorly in this game based on that. I think, you know, overall Tampa's play was pretty good in terms of the results in this game. But the fact they went after him that much is basically telling me they thought, and two quarterbacks who were in a competition to try and look as good relative to each other were trying to pick on a quarterback corner that they thought they could take advantage of. Marquise Robinson didn't get that treatment. And, you know, he's playing on the outside opposite TJ Tampa for a fair amount of this game. They didn't challenge him. He actually drew a holding call on Laquon Treadwell when they had a breakdown of the offensive line. I think it might have been a Ham who broke down at the line. Might have been somebody else. I think it was Ham. And, the run went way wide left for a big gain, 34-yard gain. And then it got called back because of this Laquon Treadwell holding call and made into only a 5-yard gain. All of his targets were short. He had a 10-yard pass that went incomplete. He had another ball that he dislodged right at the line of scrimmage for a pass defense. And then he had a 4-yard throw to Aju Aju, one of the greatest names in football history, that went down quickly right after the catch. So, I mean, I can temper my excitement for Marquise Robinson with the quality of players that the Colts had in the second half, and it was lower, but I got to still say that's a really fine outing.
You know, I think from that vantage point, yes, it is a fine outing. Anytime a team, and this is where I'm trying to look back on when they had their joint practice. They were doing one-on-ones, and from a getting beat deep aspect of things, that's where I think he was one of the few guys that actually held up. There were some deep balls that were thrown and shoulda, coulda, woulda been completed, but they fell short, and or they were just incomplete because the receiver didn't hold on to it. But I think that's where, in their mind, like, oh, well, we just got ourselves some free scouting report, and we're going to go ahead and test, in this particular case, TJ Tampa, as opposed to going after Martin. So I think that's something that, from a bigger picture aspect of it all, the joint practice worked in his favor.
Yeah, it's good. I know that during the OTAs, they were posting speed times from practices and the fastest guys. And Marquise Robinson, I think, had the fastest time of anybody during OTAs. Now, Mitchell might have topped it later because I know he was doing some sprints and he registered over 22 miles an hour. But I think Marquise Robinson, at least in one early day, they showed the fastest speeds at practice. And he was number one. It was by a fairly wide margin, like 21 and a half to, you know, whatever the next highest was, being, you know, 20 and change.
You know, I think those metrics, maybe you call me old school, and I will gladly yield to that, although I am gadget man and I love me some gadgets. So, you know, the metrics, I do appreciate them, but, you know, are you using your, what, how are you, when are you using that speed? Like, is it a scenario where, you know, you're taking the first or second play from scrimmage and you're taking it the distance, a la Derrick Henry against the Bills? Like, now that is, oh, well, how fast was he running? Oh, that to me seems like it was really cool. Or, yeah, you know, is Keaton Mitchell, you know, his first year when he was able to get past a really good was it the Lions defensive front? And then he was able to get to the sideline and break the angle of pursuit of the defender as he went to the end zone. Like, that's something that shows me speed. But if you got beat on the play and now all of a sudden you panicking and you sprint down the field, I got to get him. And then all of a sudden your metric registers as like, wow, you went XYZ fast. You're going to have to miss me with all that.
I gotcha. Now I'm with you on that. I think it provides an opportunity, but you definitely got to be able to use your speed and use it for good instead of evil. Use it to be able to peek back into that backfield and then track the football and find it. Use it along with your instincts, but whatever it is, speed and something else is like walking and chewing gum. You need to be able to do both of them.
Amen. Yeah, agreed. I think, especially in this, league, it's such a fine line of what is a great play versus what is a play that is going to cost a guy his job or cost a guy or cost a team a victory.
All right. Well, I think we've gone through enough of the players. Why don't we give our three MVPs for the game? Do you have a number three player for this game that you'd like to start with?
The number three player, I'm going to go back to Jalen Armour-Davis. I thought he, had to seize the moment. I thought he seized the moment, whether it be Kone going down to injury and him staying locked in for the game and not necessarily worried about taking off his pads. I thought that was really cool. And maybe a 3B would be TJ Tampa already because cheating. Everybody – Well, no, because everybody's tripping out on him, but okay. He played the whole game. He played the whole game. Give him some love in that regard. So that's why I would say 3B. You won't get 3A because he didn't make the splash plays, but at least he played the whole game.
Okay, so TJ Tampa's on my honorable mention list, and it's a very long honorable mention list on this from this Raiders team this game. So he's on my honorable mention list. Which Sounds is kind of like having a whole bunch of fours, which I'll get into later. My number three guy is Jay Higgins. I thought, he was one of the two players. I probably could have either done Martin or Higgins. I put Higgins play a little bit ahead of Martin, even though they were both great rolling down the stretch in this game. And he's my number three guy.
So I would say Ravenel. Like, I loved his moxie. I loved his when they were doing stunts, sometimes you're the one that is going to benefit off of a stunt and other times your teammate is going to benefit off of a stunt. And I think he used some really good leverage in multiple situations that they called for the defense to do. I love that. I love the fact that he was able to, get pressure in the backfield and speed up a play. I would say Ravenel gets my nod as the second guy.
Great choice. Loved his game. Loved everything he did pretty much in it. I hope he's a guy the Ravens can hold on to. It may have to be on the practice squad given how deep they are, obviously, at the position. But that can change over time. And if it does, you want to have a player like C.J. Ravenel around to stick in there. My number two guy is Aeneas Peebles. There's one play I didn't mention from earlier when we were going through and talking about him, but he had a very impressive run defense play where he effectively two-gapped. I think it was the right guard. He two-gapped at the line of scrimmage, number 66 it might have been. Sills. So he two-gapped and basically kept his position so he could go in either direction. I know you know what two-gapping is. In front of Daniel Jones, who took actually it was Leonard as he took off from the pocket, and Leonard really could make a decision to go either way. And from both ends, then the Ravens contained that play and took him down for a loss of one. Now again, Peebles just denied the space, and it was somebody else who got the tackle in that play. But make no mistake, Peebles got that play by two gapping Sills and setting Leonard up in a way on that play.
That is something because what people don't realize, two gapping is a lost art. And if you talk to defensive ends, if you talk to interior guys, if you talk to linebackers, you know, that two gap scheme is in their minds like, boy, you're making me do a lot of work. And yes, they are making you do a lot of work, but if you can do that, there is going to be work for you. The big guys, you know, they typically are the ones that are the two gappers. And those are the guys that in my day are the Sam Madisons and the Tony Siragusas of the world, where they, they're going to get some sort of splash play. It's because of a technique error on the offensive lineman's part, not necessarily because of what you did. But I do appreciate Rich Gannon getting the short end of the stick when Tony Siragusa landed on him, Mr. Two Gapper.
There you go. You know what? You know what I found extra cool about that with Peebles? Peebles is known as, you know, this penetrating, slippery pass rusher. And all of a sudden he's standing up against an enormous guard. And, you know, who's heavier than him by, I don't know, probably 25 pounds. And he's holding him up intentionally with the intention of knowing he could go either way on that, when that is so opposite of what his standard bent is on a football field, to, you know, be moving upfield, penetrating and trying to, you know, get under the arm, get under the pads of these guys so he can move away from them. It's just, it really stood out to me. It was one of the reasons why I probably gave him an extra grade level on that in this game.
My number one guy is going to be Mike Green. I am just like, yo, we need to get that Elvis Dumervil. I don't know if he's quite the player when it comes to his game, but Terrell Suggs type of a guy that just is a disruptor. And that's what I'm looking for, a disruptor. I think that if Zach Orr's defense can have that disruptor, then they are going to be dangerous. Because what they like to do, and what you had pointed out earlier in the show, is that you got a four-man rush, but you're looking at, when you go to the line of scrimmage, six guys at the line of scrimmage, five guys at the line of scrimmage, and you're like, all right, well, who's coming from where? But if you got the disruptor, you know your team is going to have to fan out to his side, which will invariably free up someone else. And so if you don't do it, then he will disrupt you, and he will get to the quarterback or get a tackle for loss and disrupt the backfield flow. So I love the way he was experimenting with some things. This is the time to do it, and trying to figure out, you know, what works best for him in this pro game. And I just think that the sky's the limit for him.
Yeah, first of all, completely agree on the sky being the limit. And we saw a lot from Mike Green that was very cool in this game. One thing that he's been doing more of, and he had an interception dropping to coverage as a Sam linebacker during OTAs. And this is something that Green could massively improve his value by being able to do that as well. What you're talking about is, you know, if you want to slide protection to Mike Green's side because you think he's always coming as a passer and he drops, you think of that as kind of wasting the player sometimes if you waste your best pass rusher by dropping into coverage. But oftentimes, you just created the overload on one side, just made it that much easier for the slot corner or safety to rush off that opposite edge and get home. I mean, it basically is football 101, but Green, if he could play Sam linebacker for this team, it'd be an enormous advantage. And, you know, that's one of the real kind of tragedies about Adafe Owe here, is that he's really never graduated into that role. He's been a pure rush linebacker, and he's got all the athleticism you would need to play the Sam spot. It's just not, I guess, it's just not natural for him to drop the coverage as often.
Yeah, I think that's something that, you know, versatility wise, if you can't improve your repertoire, you know, eventually teams are going to be like, all right, well, this is who you are. And that's good, but that's going to be an advantage for the offense. And so you're always trying to improve your repertoire and not just be a one trick pony.
All right. My number one guy, Jalen Armour Davis, for the reasons I really gave before, so I won't repeat them, but did so much to improve his own stock for the 25 Ravens. He may well get playing time. I mean, this is a year. You got a couple guys in front of him who have a long injury histories. You got Wiggins, who's kind of a twig on one side. You got Marlon Humphrey playing in the slot, where he's no doubt going to take a lot more contact. Cornerbacks naturally get injured. He's positioned himself very well to help this team with this first preseason game.
Yeah, I think that, big picture wise, if he can play in that slot, that's going to be so incredibly valuable. I think that, the outside is the outside, and hopefully, knock on wood, and there's no injuries to speak of with Nate Wiggins or Jair Alexander or Uzie. You're putting yourself in a position to give them, meaning the coaching staff, flexibility to use you. And that's a good thing.
All right. Well, Q, always a pleasure talking football with you. Thanks for making time for this tonight. I know it's a big commitment of time to do these shows, but tell folks where they can get in contact with you and talk football.
Yeah, so from a in-season standpoint, you can check me out on X, formerly known as Twitter, as we always have to say. But I am Kadri Ismail is where you can interact with me. I just say this, that if you are a Lamarite and you feel that you have this high, dumb IQ, then go ahead and don't follow me and don't look at anything that I post, because we are all about the intelligent wittiness comment rather than trying to break it down esoterically and read into it as something bigger that really has nothing to do with nothing but you being a fanboy of an amazing player, but realize that you don't know really much about football. There I digress. At the same time, if you want to, you can check out some of my podcasts, Locked On Ravens with Kevin Ostreicher and I go on his show weekly, and then our squad show, we have it Mondays and Thursdays, and then also after games. So we definitely give you some understanding as far as just what we saw and what we see in the upcoming week of games throughout the season and throughout the year. And then, of course, my Purple Pregame show on WJZ.
All right. Outstanding, Kadri. Give those various podcasts and, of course, the pregame show a good shot. Thanks for listening to this show. As always, like and subscribe and tell that person how they can download this podcast just once so they get an opportunity to listen to the content, hopefully fall in love with it. Really appreciate all you folks out there, and we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Get your exterior painting to-dos done easily with Dutch Boy Pristine Exterior Paint. With its rain rinse technology, rain naturally washes away dirt and grime. Plus, it resists cracking and peeling, making it perfect to withstand the harshest weather conditions. Save big money on pristine exterior paint and start your painting project today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big money.